Hello and welcome. Today we're traveling back to a moment when Europe felt like it was coming apart at the seams. Picture a busy Mediterranean port in the late 1340s. Sails billowing, spices and silks unloading, sailors shouting across the docks. A ship ties up. Within days, the same terrified word whispers through the city: plague. People collapse in markets. Church bells toll until there's no one left to ring them. What unfolds is not just a disease, but a shock that unmade society. Why did the Black Death do damage on a scale that still haunts us? It wasn't one bad microbe on a bad day. It was a perfect storm. A stressed environment, fragile cities, booming trade, and a wildly adaptable pathogen meeting at exactly the wrong time. Let's start with the world before the plague. Europe was already weakened. The climate had cooled in the early 1300s, the Little Ice Age. Colder, wetter seasons crushed harvests. Between 1315 and 1322, famine spread. For years, millions lived on the edge. Malnutrition doesn't just mean hunger. It means your body's doors are unlocked. Disease walks in more easily. When the plague arrived, it didn't meet strong, well-fed communities. It met people already worn thin. At the same time, the world felt more connected than ever. Think of the Silk Road and the Mediterranean as the internet of the Middle Ages. Ideas, goods, and wealth moving fast. Those connections were also highways for disease. The plague bacterium likely traveled from rodent populations in Central Asia, hitchhiking with fleas onto black rats, and from there onto ships. If you were a flea on a rat in a grain sack, a merchant vessel was your luxury liner. Proud trading cities like Genoa and Venice became the front doors the plague walked through. Inside those cities, conditions did the rest. Urban Europe was crowded and unplanned. Families stacked into small rooms. Neighbors shared wells, walls, and air. Waste ran through streets. Food markets teemed with animals. If you've ever heard your neighbor sneeze through an apartment wall, imagine that with a disease that could spread by bite and, horrifyingly, by breath. It was like striking a match in a house stuffed with dry timber. And the microbe itself was no one-trick germ. The plague typically appeared in its bubonic form, spread by flea bites, causing those painful swellings, buboes, in the groin or armpit. But sometimes it shifted into a pneumonic form, spreading directly person to person through coughs. In crowded rooms, the fire jumped from attic to attic. No flea needed, just human breath. In that form, it could kill within days. Medieval medicine had no theory that matched this reality. People talked of bad air or divine punishment, but the cause was invisible and unthinkable. The numbers still stun. Across Europe, roughly a third to a half of the population died within a few years. Think of your street, if every other house went dark. In some places, the losses were worse. Florence may have lost 3 out of 4 people. That wasn't just grief, that was the floor yanked from under society. Then came the unraveling. Doctors, priests, and caregivers died in huge numbers because they stayed close. Those who could flee did, sometimes carrying the disease to the next town. Burial rites broke down, bodies piled up. Public trust frayed. When fear hunts for answers, it can turn cruel, and it did. Rumors blamed outsiders and minorities. Jewish communities were scapegoated and attacked in many cities. A tragedy born of panic and prejudice. These were choices made in fear, and they left deep scars. But after the wave receded, Europe looked different. With so many dead, there weren't enough hands for harvests, workshops, or building. Before the plague, you might be one of 100 people vying for a day's work. After, you might be one of 50. Wages rose. People who had been told you're lucky to have work could now say, you'll be lucky to have me. That shift wasn't neat. Governments tried to force pay back to old levels. England passed laws to freeze wages. But scarcity pulled harder than regulation. Land use changed too. With fewer workers, many fields shifted from grain to sheep pasture, which needs less labor. Wool boomed. Some landlords became shepherd capitalists. Some peasants negotiated new leases, moved to better terms, or claimed freedoms once denied. You can feel the feudal order loosening, thread by thread. As taxes rose and elites tried to reassert control, people pushed back. Famously in uprisings like the English Peasants' Revolt of 1381. The plague didn't cause those revolts alone, but it loaded the spring. There was also a quiet revolution, the birth of public health. City leaders, desperate to hold back the next wave, tried new ideas. In what's now Dubrovnik, officials required arriving ships to wait offshore. First 30 days, then 40. 40 giorni, 40 days, gave us the word quarantine. Italian cities built quarantine stations on islands, tracked ships, and set up health boards to coordinate responses. Knowledge moved. Rules hardened. Over time, Europe learned to manage disease with more than prayers and luck. Religion faced a storm of its own. Many clergy risked and lost their lives caring for the sick. Others fled. When you've buried your family, and your priest can't explain why this is happening, doubts creep in. Some people join flagellant processions, punishing their bodies to atone. Others turn to private devotion, mysticism, or skepticism. This didn't topple the church overnight, but it planted seeds of questioning that would bloom later. Culture absorbed the shock. Art filled with dancing skeletons and hourglasses. Not morbid for morbidity's sake, but a way to live with the nearness of death. Memento mori, remember you will die, became a spiritual posture. And daily life for survivors could improve. With more land per person and higher wages, diets got better, homes a bit larger, fuel more available. It's a cruel irony, a catastrophe that raised living standards for those who made it through. Zoom out, and you can see the chain reaction. A colder climate strains harvests, hunger weakens bodies, booming trade ferries rats and fleas across oceans, cities pack people close, a chameleonic pathogen jumps from bite to breath, institutions bend and break, terror feeds violence, labor shortages upend the social order. And out of it all, new tools, quarantine, health boards, wage leverage, and art that stares death in the face take shape. The plague wasn't just a disease event, it was a stress test for an entire civilization. There are details and debates, of course, how exactly the microbe moved, which routes mattered most, why some places suffered more than others. Historians and scientists keep refining the picture. If you want the nuts and bolts, the written article goes deeper. What matters for us is the pattern. Pandemics hit hardest where vulnerabilities line up. When bodies are hungry, cities are crowded, leaders are unprepared, and rumors outrun facts. And yet, people adapt. They invent, they bargain, they build new systems from old ruins. So why did the Black Death unleash such devastation? Because it arrived at the precise intersection of weakness and connection. Europe was fragile enough to be broken, and tied together tightly enough for the break to spread. One spark finding the driest forest at the windiest hour. As we think about our own interconnected world, that's the echo I hear. Trade brings prosperity and risk. Public trust is as important as medicine. Health isn't just hospitals. It's full stomachs, clean streets, and steady information. And resilience comes not from pretending we can avoid crisis, but from building systems that don't shatter when it hits. If this conversation lit a curiosity, you'll find deeper dives and sources in the written piece. For now, thanks for traveling back with me. History can be grim, yes. But it's also a study in human invention under pressure. And that, to me, is worth remembering.